Support for WPR comes from Half Price Books, where stories, ideas, and adventures await. Information on how to resolve to read more this year can be found at local neighborhood Half Price Book stores or at hpb.com.
100 years ago, Margaret Sanger opened the first birth control clinic in America, for which she became one of the most demonized and vilified women of her age. You could argue that she still is. Now Ellen Feldman has brought Margaret Sanger back to life in a novel, published, ironically, the same month the Supreme Court heard arguments about abortion rights for women in Texas.
That's what was so appalling and kind of surreal as I was doing the research. I mean, I'd get up in the morning and I'd look at the paper with my morning coffee, and then I'd go to the library and the archives and do the research, and I was reading the same headlines essentially 100 years apart. We are still fighting her battle in many ways.
Ellen Sanger's new novel is called Terrible Virtue. Raymond Tangekar wanted to know why she chose Margaret Sanger as a character.
Ever since I was a kid, I guess, I thought she was the most amazing woman who wrought an amazing revolution. I mean, there are very few people around the world now who have not been affected by her, not just women, but men and children as well. And I just thought it was important that people knew about her. I had an amazing experience when I was doing the research. I filed a slip for one of her books, and my handwriting's not very good. A young woman at the New York Public Library, we said, "Who is this, Margaret Sawyer?" And I said, "No, Sanger." And I stopped for a moment and I said, "Do you know who she is?" And she said, "No, I have no idea." This was a woman, I would guess, in her mid-20s. And I really thought it was important that Margaret Sanger's story be told again and again and again as time goes on.
Do you remember what it was that first drew you to her?
I think the history of what this country was like before she started her work. Contraception was illegal in this country. It could be prescribed only by doctors and only to men and only to prevent disease. And she fought long and hard and went to jail repeatedly to make birth control legal, to improve women's lives and to improve their children's lives, because there were just, you know, when you had very poor women giving birth to 12 and 14 children and not being able to support them or feed them. And it was a terrible situation. So she really changed the landscape of our country, but the sexual landscape, the political landscape, the social landscape, certainly.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that she completely revolutionized the way we think about birth and sexuality. You know, I think most people know her as the founder of Planned Parenthood, or at least the organization that would eventually become that. But
yes,
aside from that, I don't think people know much else. What else can you tell me about Margaret Sanger, or at least about her early life?
She came to birth control for several very good reasons, but one especially was that her mother, she was from a kind of genteel poverty. Her mother gave birth to 13 children. 11 survived, 2 died in infancy. And she watched her mother just work herself to death. She died of tuberculosis and exhaustion at the age of 50. And her father, who was an alcoholic dreamer, who did not believe in birth control, lived to 88. Mm. And so this was a very personal fight for her. She was also one of the most sexually active women of the 20th century, so she believed in birth control for her own purposes, too.
Well, you mentioned earlier that, I mean, what she was doing is incredibly dangerous, right? I mean, what she was doing was basically illegal. Did
yes.
she just not care? Did she think that she wasn't going to go to jail?
No, she, in fact, after she opened that first birth control clinic, she got a choice between jail and a fine. And her supporters at that point would have paid the fine very happily. And she chose to go to jail for a month because she knew that would make headlines, that would get more publicity for her cause. Her sister, who went to jail for the same, her sister was with her opening the birth control, sister went to jail first, and she went on a hunger strike. And this made the front page of newspapers across the country for days and days, this hunger strike. They force-fed her. It was a horrible. At this time, they were force-feeding women, suffragists, and for political causes, all this sort of thing.
Hmm. Well, and as you point out, that Margaret Sanger spent most of her life spreading and educating people about birth control, but she also got involved with creating new forms of contraception, in particular the pill. Could you talk about that connection?
Yeah. After she made some advances. 1936, it became legal for doctors to receive birth control devices through the mail. And there were other gains she made. She still had a dream, and that was that although birth control was accessible for many women, it was not easy. Women in the slums, again, women in the country who had no access to doctors, had no access to birth control. And she dreamed of a shot or a pill or some kind of magic medical device that could make birth control easy and available to women all over, no matter how poor they were or how isolated. And people told her, dream on. And she said, no, we have all sorts of vaccines against diseases, whooping cough, diphtheria. There must be something, some medical development that will make birth control easy. And she kept working at it, and she found a scientist who had a small laboratory in Massachusetts, and she put him together with a woman who had many millions of dollars and was interested in the cause. And Margaret was instrumental in the development of the pill. The first pill became legal in 1960. That was how long her battle went on.
Well, another thing you write about is Margaret Sanger's sexual life. I mean, she had multiple sexual affairs, multiple partners before and during her marriages. Which, I mean, that's controversial today, but I can't even imagine how taboo that must have been 100 years ago.
Exactly. It was enormously taboo. I mean, this would have been the kiss of death if people knew that she was having all these affairs. Kiss of death, I mean, for the contraceptive movement. And she managed to keep that very, very private. I don't think you could do it in this day and age. She did then. Although heaven knows that some people tried to, you know, catch her out in this. The other aspect of this is, yes, it was her appetites. I mean, she had a huge sexual drive. It was her philosophical and political and social belief. She started out as an anarchist and a socialist and certainly a progressive in every form. And at that point in the early 20th century, marriage was seen as slavery for women. Wives had no rights. And she did not believe in marriage, but she married. And that was a hard question for me to figure out why she did this. But she refused to give in to bourgeois conventions that once you marry, you must be faithful. You must not have sex before marriage at that time. And then once you're married, your husband must be your only sexual partner. And she felt that would be, as I said, yielding to bourgeois convention.
We should talk a little bit about Margaret Sanger's support for eugenics. I mean, frankly, if you like look her up on the internet today, that's a lot of what shows up. Some of the quotes I've seen have been pretty damning.
And they are crazy, right-wing conspiracies against Margaret Sanger. Those quotes that you're reading online, incidentally, are bolderized. They take some of her words and they cut out of context, and they match them up with Hitler's words. In fact, the Nazis burned her books. They banned them and they burned all of her books. And before and during World War II, she fought the State Department and brought over many Jewish refugees. She's also accused of having, even now, of trying to wipe out African Americans. In fact, she opened birth control clinics in the South and in Harlem because African American women came to her for help. And in fact, she was interviewed by African-American newspapers saying the only way to wipe out racism in this country is to educate the white population. So she was never a racist.
Well, with respect to eugenics, I mean, what exactly did she believe? Did she favor any type of... Did she think certain groups should stop breeding?
Absolutely not. When she did get mixed up with the eugenics movement, it was a very respectable movement in America. Every university had a chair in it, had departments of it, and all of this. And while she believed that eugenics was a science at the time, she came to see that it wasn't. As time went on, and we saw what was going on in Germany, she saw very quickly that this was a slippery slope, and she pulled back from eugenics. The other interesting aspect of this is the people who were eugenicists, Theodore Roosevelt. Oliver Wendell Holmes is known as one of our most liberal justices. He doesn't get tarred and feathered with the term eugenicist, only Margaret Sanger, because Margaret Sanger was a woman and she was for women's control of their own bodies. It's a very unfortunate situation and absolute sexism there.
Yeah, I think you've just answered my question. But, you know, for a while I've been wondering what it is about Margaret Sanger that inspires such vitriol.
I think it's interesting. Margaret could be a very abrasive woman. She could also be a very charming woman. I mean, the women who worked for her adored her. Men fell in love with her right and left. I mean, it wasn't just sexual liaisons. So many of them wanted to marry her. But as I said, she could be abrasive. So historically, that's part of it. I think now, in our society, women who don't play by the rules, who make their own rules, who create revolutions, successful revolutions, frighten many people, women as well as men. I was amazed when I was working on the book. People always say to novelists, oh, what are you working on now? And I'd say Margaret Sanger. Some people said, oh, that's great. And one historian, whom I respect greatly, male historian, he said, oh, my God, what an awful woman she was. And I said, Why do you say that? Did you have any, you know, he was too young to have known her. I said, you know, any research or anything? No, it was just an impression he had of her. I spent a lot of time while I was working on this convincing my husband that she was, besides doing great things, that she was an extraordinarily wonderful woman as well.
That's Ellen Feldman talking with Raymond Tungekar about her new novel. It's called Terrible Virtue.